Freight Up.
Hello and welcome back to Freight Up, the freight and commodity podcast of Freight Investor Services. I'm Jess, and together with Davide, we will be your hosts as we navigate our major freight and bulk commodity market. Welcome back.
Hello, everyone. So we are witnessing a resurgence in the freight market, and we'll be chatting with Ben Klang about it. On the other hand, iron ore has pulled back from its recent highs, and Haupay will shed some light on this. Finally, Archie Smith will tell us about the latest news on the fuel oil market. But first, let's have a look at the main macro news of the past 2 weeks.
Donald Trump has decided to suspend military aid to Ukraine as pressure increases over Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky to make concessions for a peace deal. On the other hand, European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen has unveiled the Rearm Europe plan, which could mobilize around $800 billion in defense spending. Additionally, President Trump has imposed an additional new tariff of 10% on imports from China and duties of 25% on those from Canada and Mexico. Beijing has announced countermeasures of 10 to 15% on American agricultural goods, and Canada has unveiled tariffs on $107 billion of American imports. Mexico is expected to follow up soon. The UK's annual inflation rate surged to 3% in January, the highest since March 2024, up from 2.5% in December and exceeding market forecasts of 2.8%. Meanwhile, the S&P Global UK Manufacturing PMI dropped to 46.9 in February, down from 48.3 in January, the revised higher from preliminary estimates of 46.4, indicating the sharpest contraction in the sector since December 2023. On the other hand, the S&P Global UK Service PMI edged up to 51.1 in February, surpassing both January's reading of 50.8 and market expectations.
In Japan, the annual inflation rate climbed to 4% in January, up from 3.6% in the prior month, marking the highest level since January 2023. Across Europe, France's annual inflation rate dropped sharply to 0.8% in February. This was the lowest since February 2021, down from 1.7% in January and below market expectations of 1%. In contrast, back home in Italy, inflation rate rose 1.7% in February, up from 1.5% in January, aligning with market forecasts. Italy's GDP expanded by 0.7% in 2024, maintaining the same growth rate as the previous year and reflecting an upward revision from earlier estimates of 0.5%, which had been adjusted for the impact of 4 fewer working days. What about the market movements of the last 2 weeks? Let's take a quick look. So following the Oscars, the award for the biggest mover of the past 2 weeks goes to the Capesize. The C5TC surged from $6,282 2 weeks ago to $16,328 yesterday, a whopping 160% increase. Panamaxes, however, haven't followed the same trajectory. The P5TC moved from $9,375 on the 18th of February to $10,400 on the 25th, only to drop back to $9,218 yesterday. Supramaxes have made some gains, with the S10TC climbing from $8,239 2 weeks ago to $9,035 yesterday. Handy sizes shows a similar trend, with the HS7TC rising from $8,989 on the 18th of February to $9,078 last week and edging up to further $9,860 yesterday.
Welcome back to the podcast, Ben. How are you doing this morning?
Yes, thank you very much, Jess. I'm doing well. It's been an interesting reporting period, so I'm looking forward to driving into the latest market moves.
All right, let's get straight to it then. So the Cape market has finally gained strength after an extended period of unseasonably low rates. Can you walk us through the recent price movements and what's driving the surge?
Absolutely. The Capesize market actually supporting the dry FFA market this reporting period, with strong momentum in both basins. In the Pacific in particular, has tightened significantly due to a steady demand from miners and operators. Looking at the Kpler data, Australian weekly iron ore shipments surged to 16.2 million tons, the highest level recorded this year. And compare that to the 4 weeks moving average of 12.4 million tons. This momentum pushed up the March contract from 12,800 on February the 19th to a peak of 19,850 on March the 3rd, marking a 55% increase. However, concerns over tariff has introduced a kind of bearish sentiment, pulling the March contract back down to around 17,400. Similarly, the Q2 contract rose from 19,250 to 21,000 and a quarter before fluctuating back to around 19,900 as of yesterday.
Looking ahead, do you see the strength continuing for the Capesize earnings?
There's optimism that rates will remain firm through April, though they're expected to align more with the 2023 levels rather than last year's high. Demand remains strong, with the total cargo volumes projected to rise by 8%, potentially reaching 17.5 million tons per week. And if you look at the C3 Brazil-China route, shipments totaled 5 million tons last week and are forecasted to rise to 6, maybe 6.5 million tons over the next 2 weeks. Additionally, expectations for further stimulus measures from China's National People's Congress could support market sentiment throughout the year.
So while the Capes are strengthening, Panamaxes and Supermax markets seem to be heading in the opposite direction. What's been happening here?
Well, it's quite a contrast. I mean, you can say that Capes really been holding up the other sizes because there's been a really bearish sentiment there. The March Panamax contract has dropped from 11,725 on February the 19th to 8,800 as of yesterday, while the March Supras contract has fallen from 11,350 to 9,300.
So what's been driving this decline then?
Big picture here is weak demand is the primary factor. The Panamax index shed 10% of its value, falling to $8,233 last Friday, while front 2 months futures dropped by $1,450 and $1,750 respectively. A key driver has been the decline in Indonesian coal exports to China, which fell to 2.8 million tons per week, below its four-week moving average. Similar trends has been seen in shipments to India. Adding to this uncertainty, Indonesia has introduced new regulations requiring coal producers to prioritize domestic sale for at least 1 year, limiting fresh export cargo availability.
Is there any upside for the Panamaxes in the near term?
One positive factor is that Brazil's peak soybean harvest season, which could increase cargo volumes in the coming weeks. Additionally, with tariffs tension escalating between the US and China, we could see more Chinese soybean purchase from East Coast South America instead of the US, which may create more opportunities for the Panamax vessels.
So what kind of volumes have we been seeing over this period?
Last week was particularly notable as Capesize trading volume overtook for the first time this year. We saw 36,830 lots cleared in the Capesize and 31,500 in the Panamax, while Supermax held steady at 11,590 lots. And then if you looked at the option front, 6,000 lots were traded in Capesize versus 1,260 in the Panamax. For voyage route C5, iron ore shipments saw strong interest with 7.5 million tons traded cleared. In terms of open interest, as of March the 3rd, Capesize stood at 159,833 lots, down 15,620 week on week. Panamax was at 158,321 lots, down 15,310. And Supermax was at 74,780, down 7,600 week on week.
All right, this is starting to feel like a bit of a reoccurring theme, but we need to talk about the tariffs. How are these developments impacting dry freight?
It's definitely a major concern, Jess. While the full impact remains uncertain, tariff and trade barriers are poised to significantly shift trade flows, particularly in the Pacific. Again, in Indonesian coal and Chinese steel shipments are already feeling pressure, And the dry bulk market reacted sharply to China's latest countermeasures against U.S. tariffs. On Tuesday, China imposed tariffs up to 15% on U.S. agricultural products, including soybeans, beef, and cotton. Additionally, China suspended imports of U.S. logs and soybeans from three American firms. While the U.S. plays a relatively small role in the dry bulk, it remains crucial for the sub-Cape demand, especially in the grain trades.
There's also some speculation about restrictions on Chinese-built or operated vessels. Could that shake up global trade patterns?
Definitely. I mean, there's discussions about imposing additional fees on Chinese-built or Chinese-operated ships calling at U.S. ports. If this is implemented, these measurements could drive up freight costs in the Atlantic, disrupt tonnage availability, and shift regional trade flows significantly.
So how does the Chinese policy response fit into this bigger picture?
The Chinese National People's Congress is expected to announce key economic policies aimed at achieving roughly 5% GDP growth while addressing disinflation. While stimulus measures are widely expected, I think the big question here is whether they target the steel-driven construction, supporting dry bulk demand, or focused on boosting consumer spending. This uncertainty adds another layer of complexity for the market.
Okay, so we've talked through quite a few risks now. Is there any upside for the dry freight market?
There's definitely potential for a cyclical rebound in China's economy, which could drive more volatility in the market. The dry bulk sector is also experienced structural tightness due to stable bulk commodity demands and a relatively low order book for new vessels. If Chinese economy picks up, we could see renewal strength in freight rates. However, I would say the short-term risks remain high and traders will need to navigate this uncertainty really carefully.
Well, that's a great overview of where we stand as of today. Thanks for the insights, Ben. We'll be keeping a close eye on all of these developments and we'll be back soon for another update. Thank you for joining.
Thank you, Jess. Have a nice day and see you next time.
And now let's talk about iron ore with Hao Pei. Hao, thank you very much for joining us. We have seen a significant drop in the iron ore price this week. So maybe you can tell us a little bit more about the factors that may have caused it.
Well, iron ore gave back gains after a huge open interest in both DCE and SGX, in particular at high level. And I think the secondly, the market rumored about there was a 15 million tons of production curb in China, and their two big mills accepted the target. I think both Australia and Brazil shipments catch up fast. During the last 2 weeks, the shipment was up by 15 million tons, so which roughly filled the gap of cyclone loss. Mm-hmm. Some of the market participants expect the loss at least take half a year, at least a quarter to fill this gap. So that's faster than expected. And I think on the macro side, the risk appetite was down for all commodities during the current 2 weeks. We see the drop on the NASDAQ, and we see the drop on European equities and global equities. And I think the other concern is about the trade wars, which are happening every day and among a lot of the countries. So we're seeing them occurring. So I think that's on the macro side. So the high liquidity commodity saw drops. So I think that all leads to the significant drop of iron ore price during this week and end of last week.
Okay, and looking at the iron ore market more specifically about the rest of the quarter, I mean, like, are there any changes on the spreads that you can see happening?
Yeah, I think that's what people do currently since the price dropped too fast. So there could be very limited directional chance to enter this market if you have nothing on hands right now. I think it's really worth to wait for a new round of change on the iron ore market. I mean, for example, if iron ore drop $7 to $10 more, why not think about buyback since spring construction season is in China and all the production curve doesn't need to happen in the first quarter at least. So I think to oversell here, but I don't think that's low enough in the Q1 as well. And I think the tariff impact, it's similar to the production curve. It's stretching out for the whole year. It doesn't mean it will have a solid impact in China, Asia, US right now, or in the next few weeks. So I think it's lower the roof of metals instead of just marginal impact. I think iron ore should have limited room to correct purely based on the fundamental market right now. And however, we think we should be aware of if macro market change, including if a 10% correction on US or China equities more, so that can be huge to the overall sentiment. And we have more than on the regarding to the spreads, and we have more than one time recommendation when it's below 40 cents last year, but during this year it's a bit of hard to trace down the low level because most of the time it's just trading among 60 cents to a dollar. So I would recommend if the price level on the front month dropped to 65 cents, for example, it's probably be a good chance to enter. And when it's go back to a dollar, and it's probably be a chance to exit. So that's my whole point on the spread trading. And I don't think there should be any like a clear trading opportunities and be 65 to plus 62 because it will probably stuck in the current level for next few weeks or the month.
Thank you very much, Hal. Now let's talk about fuel oil with Archie Smith. Archie, thank you very much for joining us. Tell us what is happening on the fuel oil market. I mean, we're seeing crude going down like tanking, actually.
Yeah, massively. It's been a really, really sort of turbulent, well, this week particularly has been very turbulent, but I think the weeks prior have sort of been a build-up, and this has been the explosion. So yesterday, front month Brent futures tumbled down to below $70 per barrel mark.
Okay.
I mean, the $70 per barrel, quite a big sort of psychological support level. It was off the back of a few things. There was news that came out late Monday night about OPEC actually going ahead with their output increases in, I think it's April. Market consensus was that they weren't going to go ahead with this because crude was already coming off. You know, we were going through, you know, 76, 75, 74, heading downwards. Market thought OPEC want to keep crude at, you know, a level that suits them. So the fact that they're reintroducing some of their supply into the market and they've decided to do so was a bit of a shock to the market.
Okay.
And obviously also another major factor that's playing a part in these falling crude prices is Trump and his tariffs.
Oh, yeah.
So I did actually mention it, I think before around Christmas time when I was on the podcast, I said that I thought it would be pretty bearish when Trump came in. And not to toot my own horn, but it seems I've hit the nail on the head there. And that's because overall tariffs and all these sort of things and sanctions, you know, it's protectionism when it comes to trade. So it's overall bearish for global demand, right? You know, if US and China are having a big trade war and US and Canada and who else, and, you know, these are all these other sort of major economies, if they're all trade warring against each other, just global demand in general falls.
Yeah,
and we're seeing that reflected in crude prices. Admittedly, we've sort of bounced back a little bit this morning, back over that $70 per barrel mark, but we're still sort of hovering around there.
I think also that like going into the spring, this may also like have like an impact on the overall energy markets and prices as well.
Yeah, there could be a little bit of seasonal factors in there, but not enough to sort of move the markets in the way that they've been moving anyway. I think it's certainly all eyes on US tariffs and on OPEC. And obviously we've had in the background as well, which has been major in the news, is the whole Ukrainian war. I know that's been sort of stirring up a lot of drama with the fiasco in the Oval Office.
Oh, yeah.
But again, that's kind of, I think that's strictly political at the minute in the sense that it's not really affecting crude prices, that specific part of what's going on. I think Russia-Ukraine war is already so priced in. There'd need to be major, major moves in that conflict to now affect crude prices.
So something like a peace deal will be something that will...
Yeah, something like that, yeah. But at the minute, sort of the to and fro there is not really going to affect markets. Okay. And then, I mean, fuel as well, if we look at the bunker market, it's been super volatile. Yesterday was a crazy day. I think fuel overall feels very heavy. Okay. A lot of things coming off. So all of our sort of 6.5 and Rotterdam 0.5 flat prices all much lower this month. And that's because not only is crude down, but also fuel cracks are down. So when you look at fuel oil prices, it's determined by crude level and crack level. And your crack level is the refining margin. Sometimes when crude comes off, crack levels increase. So it sort of keeps the flat price steady.
Okay.
But when you've got both of these factors falling dramatically, that flat price really, really comes off. So, you know, I think from a sort of shipping hedging perspective, you could look at it as an opportunity to lift some back end stuff at really low rates.
Okay.
But then, you know, it's whether you take the view is it going to come off further? And that's sort of, you know, crystal ball moment.
Yeah, exactly.
The fuel spreads are really tight. So the time spreads between April and May, 6.5, is only like a dollar at the minute. It's been trading less than a dollar as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think just overall, I think another point actually to draw on before I finish is how the sort of European complex has been holding up a lot stronger than the Singapore complex. So obviously, but everything's been coming off. Everything's coming weaker, falling. But the Rotterdam fuel oil, especially if looking more at the VLSFO, the very low sulfur fuel oil, it's coming off far less than its Singapore counterparts. And I'm not too sure how much longer that European strength can go on against the Singapore counterparts. So it'd be interesting to see sort of how that plays out in the next few weeks.
Okay. Well, if you find this crystal ball, just like let us know.
Yes, if anyone out there has got the crystal ball, please get in contact.
Thank you very much, Ash. Always a pleasure.
Cheers. Thank you.
And that's it for this week. Make sure to subscribe by clicking the subscribe button on wherever you get your podcast. Also, make sure to follow us on LinkedIn or get signed up to our app, FIS Live, to make sure you never miss any freight and commodity analysis from FIS. Thanks for joining us, and we'll be back in 2 weeks with Freight and Commodity Podcast. Freight up!
Freight up!